Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is at Pro Football Talk. Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. What's happening, Mike?
What's going on, guys?
How quickly does the offseason ramp up? How quickly do things begin to happen now, and what are you looking at?
Well, it never really slows down. Now, there's not a lot happening this week. There's some random transactions. Greg Olsen was released by the Panthers, giving him a head start on free agency. But, you know, I think that there are a couple of really big dominoes. The first one is Drew Brees going to play in 2020. I think based on an interview that we did with him last week in Miami that he will be playing. And then secondly, what's Tom Brady going to do? And we'll know at some point by early to mid-March. I suspect that once he knows he's leaving, if he's leaving, that will be leaked and we'll hear about it. Or he'll sign a new contract. But either way, that's the big one, because I think once that falls into place, wherever he's going to be, the rest of the offseason will go one way or the other, because if he's available to fill one of these other spots at quarterback, that throws everything into flux. And if he's not available, that changes teams' expectations about who's going to be available. So I think it's going to be one of the craziest offseasons, especially as it relates to quarterback movement, and it's coming soon.
Let's stick with Olsen for a second. I saw that, WFNZ in Charlotte, and Greg had a little chat where he said the mutual parting wasn't exactly how things went down. What do you think Olsen has left? Is he a potential fit for a team in desperate need of a tight end like, you know, the Bears?
Well, it's a good question. He turns 35 on March 11th, so you never know when a guy's going to reach the limit of what he can do. He's had some injuries, and those things can accumulate, and at some point he may just not have anything left. And he has expressed hope that he'll hear from the Bears. So far, it's Washington, Buffalo, and Seattle that are checking him out. He's also got door number two in the form of a standing offer from Fox to become an analyst there. And I get the impression they're willing to keep that door open indefinitely, although Jay Cutler may have thought the door was going to stay open for him when he decided to come out of retirement and play for the Dolphins a couple of years ago, and then the door never opened again. But, you know, that's the analysis. What will a team pay you versus what will Fox pay you? And do you want to keep chopping at that tree in the hopes you're going to land with a team that allows you to walk off into the sunset with a Super Bowl ring? So I suspect he's interested in playing. I think it just depends on what teams are willing to pay him, and that's going to be part of the broader analysis.
I don't know how long this iteration of the XFL is going to last, and I don't know how the quality of football is going to be. Probably not very good. But I'm always in it for experimental rules and what they're doing with kickoffs and major touchback versus minor touchback, multiple opportunities for points after touchdowns, deciding on where they're going to be and where they're going to start from for that conversion attempt. The way things are going to be called, how intrigued are you? How much attention are you going to pay it with some of what they're going to do, canary in a coal mine kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'm very interested in the ideas that the NFL could lift from the XFL. The XFL actually is using an idea that I put out there a couple of years ago for an overtime solution that is as fair and equitable as possible. They're going to do essentially a two-point conversion shootout with 44 guys on the field at each end of the field from the five-yard line, going back and forth like they do in soccer and hockey. And Oliver Luck, the commissioner of the XFL, has a history in soccer, so he's interested in that. Now, with all these different point levels and point after touchdowns. I don't know how many ties there's going to be, but I hope that they do it, and I hope the NFL sees how compelling it is, because I would love that as the alternative to the NFL's current overtime format. You know, the AAF last year brought us the concept of sky judge, which the NFL should embrace. So I go back to 1983 in the USFL when gauging my own interest in spring football, and I remember being so excited. I was a senior in high school about more football. I love football. I want more football. It's more football. Give me football. And I sat down on the couch and turned on ABC and watched the first USFL game. And the whole time I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing? It's not football season. So I can't overcome that. And I'd be a fan, and we've probably talked about this before, of an in-season minor league on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. Forget about the MAC games. Give me a professional league Tuesday and Wednesday night. But, you know, I think they're betting on, literally and figuratively, people betting on the XFL, and that will create interest. And I think we're going to be force-fed by ESPN and Fox because of the broadcast partnerships there, more extensive than what we saw with the AAF. And I think that you know, it's the old George Costanza to Russell Dalrymple. Why am I watching? Because it's on TV. And that may cause people to watch because it's going to be on ESPN, ABC, and Fox.
So I assume the Chiefs fans, having just won a Super Bowl and getting set for a parade and all that, are just thrilled with the idea of having Patrick Mahomes for the entirety of his career. Making that happen seems accomplishable, but are the hurdles that they've got to jump over, like Chris Jones and Sammy Watkins, bigger than perhaps we're imagining? What are the Chiefs going to have to do to keep together at least somewhat of a core around Mahomes to make sure they can get back to the same spot next year?
This is the biggest practical impediment to doing a deal with Patrick Mahomes now. And I want to keep it as simple as possible. It's the new money analysis that the NFLPA engages in, that the agents engage in, that the media engages in. When you have years left on a contract and you are given a quote-unquote extension, there really isn't an extension. What they do is they rip up the current deal, they replace it with a new one. But all the dollars that you get beyond the money you were supposed to earn becomes part of this new money analysis. Let me give you an example. Russell Wilson, his contract extension with the Seahawks, $35 million per year, new money. But at signing, the contract that he inked has an average of $31.4 million. So there's a gap there. And here's the problem. When you got a guy who is still making peanuts under a rookie wage scale contract, and this year Patrick Mahomes will make $2.7 million. When you give him the extension, if you give him what he wants, if you give him what he's worth, it sends that new money average through the roof. Quick example. We've been hearing $40 million a year as the number for Patrick Mahomes. Okay, if they give him a five-year extension, $200 million, $40 million a year, you throw that onto what he's making this year and next year, the average at signing is $32.8 million. A big difference between $32.8 and $40. You give him a seven-year deal at $40 million a year, $280, that's $40 million a year. But when you do the new money analysis, it's over $50 million a year because of primarily $2.7 million this year. And it's one of the reasons why the Cowboys and Dak Prescott couldn't get a deal done. He made $2 million in 2019. And I think the Chiefs are going to kick the can for a year. The kid's making a ton of money in endorsements. He'll surely have insurance. And he's not agitating for a contract now. And it's a lot easier to do a deal next year. So I think they're going to wait, which allows them to pay Chris Jones and keep Sammy Watkins. And then next year, that's when Patrick Mahomes gets that gigantic contract. And it's going to be more next year than this year. But I think it's easier for the Chiefs to do it because of that stupid new money analysis that people insist on using.
I can't remember if this was your idea or another expert with whom we talk, but it's looking like the best idea may be to exempt quarterback money from the cap, to create a separate area where teams aren't so adversely affected by doing the right thing and paying a great quarterback. The significance of the position relative to other positions, there's really nothing quite like it individually anywhere in professional sports. Why not just say, go ahead and take care of the quarterback and you'll still have an opportunity to populate the rest of your roster reasonably?
Well, it's not my idea, and I say that because I don't like it, because the NFL will never go for it. They still want to have a limit on how teams can spend and what they can spend. And I guess you could have a separate quarterback salary cap, but you still have a salary cap. Look, here's what needs to happen. What needs to happen is that one of these quarterbacks, whether it's Dak Prescott, whether it's Patrick Mahomes, whether it's a guy who makes it to the open market and has maximum bargaining power, somebody needs to put in his deal. And this is permissible. I've checked it out with the league and with the NFLPA. You need to have a provision in there that guarantees you a set percentage of the cap so that you never get to a spot where you're like, holy crap, the market has passed me by. And I think 18 to 20% for a guy like Mahomes, more than fair. So as the cap goes up, he's always going to get that percentage of the cap as his compensation. And we get away from this constant churning and this, you know, one-upsmanship. Who's due for a new deal? Who's getting him on? I'm underpaid. You're never going to be underpaid because you're going to negotiate a set percentage of what you deserve, and that's your compensation for 4, 5, 6 years into the future.
I'm wondering, though, when you set up caps like that and restrict people spending money in certain ways, what it does is just, I don't know, it victimizes players who have gotten to elite levels. And I just wonder if Mahomes is the first of, I don't know, another class of quarterback, a different kind of guy that's worth the money regardless of who you are or regardless of what the rest of the team looks like.
Well, and what he needs to ask himself is, where do I fall on the range of somebody who will take a team-friendly deal so I have players around me versus having the attitude of, my job is to play quarterback and get paid to play quarterback as much as I can get paid. Your job is to manage the salary cap. And I think the fairest way to do it is to say, you're always going to get 20% of the salary cap, yeah. Period, no matter how high it goes. Here's the problem. The management council doesn't want teams to do it. And there is collusion, subtle collusion. The management council doesn't want teams to do it. Teams don't do it. And which owner is going to be the one to buck that trend? And based upon what we saw from David Tepper, the Panthers owner, in what he's paying his new coach, Matt Rhule, blowing the curve for entry-level salary for head coaches, I think Tepper's the first one to do it once he has a quarterback he's willing to do it with.
Why does the league want the Jags to play 2 games in London?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is the Jaguars have this $500 million Patriot Place type of a mixed-use development around the stadium, and they need that time to work on the construction during the season, which is kind of weird. Why don't you do it during the offseason? Or surely there's a time on the calendar where you can find. But look, London games make more money than Jacksonville games. And Shad Khan wants to get out of the bottom 25% of the league in revenue. So you play an extra London game and make more money. And, you know, I've said that they want us to think it's not a business, right? Football is family. That's a great slogan. Football is business, and it's good business to say football is family. That's the truth. And we try to suspend disbelief. It reminds me of when I was a kid and I thought wrestling was real and I knew what was fake, but I kept ignoring that. Fans like to ignore the business realities. And here's the reality. NFL owners want to go, need to go where the money and people are. And there's more money and people in London. And now we've got this beyond one toe in the water. We've got 2 toes in the water. We got the full foot in the water. And the more the Jaguars play in London, the more I can see them sliding toward, and I don't know that they ever move there, but I could see them sliding toward the old Packers arrangement, County Stadium in Milwaukee for half the schedule, Lambeau Field for the other half, and I could see another team do the same thing. So you could have 2 teams that spend half the season in London, there's 2 stadiums there, and then you have a natural rivalry between those 2 teams that plays out in London, and I think that's the end game. Although, who knows? If they can work out some of these logistical hurdles, or if they just don't care about the logistical realities because all we care about is making money because football is business, then we could see a team move there on a full-time basis or two. I remember when Al Michaels told me 10 years or so ago that when the NFL goes back to LA, it's not going to be 1 team's but 2, and people thought, that's crazy. Well, it wasn't crazy, and it's not crazy to think of London in those terms. And bottom line is, that's where the money and the people are, and it fits with this obsession, justifiable obsession, with making the NFL a global brand.
And it also, like you say, it happens to fit with a team that also has a footprint there. And that might just be the way of testing the kind of connection of identity. It's not a random team. It is a very specific team with a very specific owner. And it's probably a good way of beta testing the idea, as you can imagine.
And I was told a couple of years ago by someone who knows what's going on within these broader dynamics, if and when Shad Khan says, I want to move to London on a full-time basis, he'll get the votes,
right,
and he'll be authorized to do it.
That's what I see. That is clearly on the table here because we're talking about Jacksonville. We're not talking about a top-3 market.
Yeah, and now it doesn't mesh with the investment he's making in Jacksonville and the money they're spending around the stadium. And that's why it makes me think he's going to try to do 4-4. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Once another team starts sniffing around London, that may change his mind. I you know, he's kind of got shotgun on London, and he's not giving up shotgun on London. He's got dibs, and that's why I remember when that rumor came out the Chargers may move to London. My first thought was, man, this is somebody trying to force Shad Khan to move that team. I later realized this is just the Rams trying to crap on the Chargers and keep them down and create uncertainty in the market so people buy Rams PSLs and season tickets. Classic. But I wouldn't be surprised at some point if somebody tries to get Shad Khan to just go ahead and do it. Quit screwing around, flirting with London. Go ahead and marry London.
Mike Florio, appreciate you as always.
All right, see you guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.